This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined again by some representatives from Buffalo High School Student Council. Hello guys, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Nice to see you. I'll have you introduce yourselves in just a moment. But also Superintendent Oski, nice to see you, Charles.
Good morning.
And today we're joined by a special guest, our Chairman of the Board of Trustees for Johnson County School District, Travis Pearson.
Good morning.
Hello, nice to see you too, and thank you for joining us. So students, would you just like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Emma Perringer, and I'm a senior at Buffalo High School.
I'm Hazen Camino, and I'm also a senior at Buffalo High School.
I'm Grace McCorkle, and I'm a junior.
I'm Gio Monticelli, and I'm a junior.
I'm Jeremiah Hawley, and I'm a senior.
I'm Kevin Sullivan, and I'm a senior.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, everybody. And today, you particularly wanted to talk to Mr. Oski and Mr. Pearson about student academics and also success. So, Emma, would you like to kick us off?
Sure. So, looking at, like, the academic performance of the high school itself, like, how do you guys plan to assess the current strengths and weaknesses in our district's, like, academic performances?
How do we do that currently, or how do we plan?
Both.
Perfect. Well, part of the new infrastructure is data-driven decisions. So, when you look at how students are performing overall, so whether it's ACT, whether it's YTOP scores, whether it's just formative assessments, how kids are placing and what they're doing, that's kind of overall branching of our directive of what a professional learning community is taking a look at data to drive instruction and guide what we're doing as a district. So that overall big picture is what we tried to do over the last couple of years is what does the data really show? Is it meeting the needs of the kids? And can we adjust or change curriculum or change instruction? Or are we meeting the needs of the kids? So it is a very data-driven world. But you got to be very careful not to take the data just to drive everything. It's a very human world that we live in because we talk about students, we talk about teachers, so there's that human aspect of things too. So that's kind of the whole initiative behind professional learning communities is making decisions based on data. So I see we have in here like the ACT score, the average composite score of a 19.4, correct? So and kind of where we rank. So that's what we are in society. We always compare ourselves to, hey, how do we rank? Are we number one or are we last, right? There's only a winner or loser. Well, in this situation, there isn't a winner or loser. It's about what does that 19.4 mean? I mean, that's a question I might ask you guys. What does an ACT score of BHS mean to you as students? Because I almost will guarantee it's going to mean something different as the chairman of the board. It's going to mean something to you as students as a different thing too. What does that 19.4 actually mean? So can I ask that question? What does it mean to you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know like for a significant portion of Buffalo High School plans on attending a Wyoming college, or at least a large portion does. And I think the biggest way that ACTs impact those students in particular is like college cowboy commitment if they plan on going to UW, or that might be the Hathaway. But I think it's certainly a useful indicator of not necessarily how successful you'll be in college, but more of how ready you are for college. I know there's always like that rule of like a 23 is considered college ready, which is pretty far off from 19.4. And I know what the cutoff for the lowest Hathaway is, what, Kevin, 20, 22? Is it 20? I think it's 20. I know the one for the highest is 25. But I certainly think it's a metric in terms of how much help will I get going through college, but furthermore, maybe am I ready for college?
Can I ask a question to you both groups, to you educators and to you students, which is that the ACT is a very specific test. Do you think that it is a valuable test anymore? And during COVID, a lot of colleges suspended their requirement for ACT testing, and not all of them have gone back, and the same is true of SATs. Are these valuable tests, or are they just another bit of work that has to be done and accomplished?
Well, I suppose you need something in order to differentiate students, something that's somewhat objective, some sort of numerical metric. Whether the ACT or SAT is the best method of doing that, perhaps, perhaps not, but I do think you need something there.
especially with, like, GPA inflation. Like, you'll have private high schools, everybody gets a 5.0 no matter what they do. And it's unfair to compare those students who, you know, get a 5.0 in everything they do because they're from a private high school that's inflating GPAs. And then comparing that to, like, Buffalo High School where there's, I'd like to say, less GPA inflation than there is in other schools.
I think it's kind of just a hoop that you have to go through in school, and it helps you kind of know where you're at academic-wise. But at the same time, some people can get great scores on tests like that and test really well, and then they get to college, and it can be a different dynamic from what we're used to, and it's just not for them, and it doesn't go as easily as they might think it is, just because they test well.
Mr. Oski, you've been in education a long time.
This is super exciting stuff. They're all right on the same track. So ACT is a measure of what? It's a period in time, correct, on whether you've mastered certain skill sets up to this. But we can all easily defend by saying it's not a true indicator of success. Is that fair?
Yes.
Your ACT score is not going to be a true indicator of success. However, that 19.4 to me is an average. Okay, I can honestly look at everybody in this room and says not every kid graduating from school, which took this test, is headed on to a four-year college, correct?
Mm-hmm.
We're one of the few states that requires every kid to take it. So that's a composite score over every junior that takes that. More of a data piece is to look at that 25 to 30 or 40%, depending on the culture, the climate of the school. How are those kids scoring? So if that upper 25% that are going on to college, their average ACT score is a 24 or a 25, that's probably more of a true predictor if those kids are ready for college. But you have to remember, this encompasses the 19.4 encompasses. That means you had some kids at a 34, you had some kids that are very at the bottom, so you're talking that medium. So looking at the data and how that pertains to what kids do after school and how successful they are, is also another critical component that I think we as a district need to look at too. Those percentage of kids that are going on to a four-year college, are they prepared? Because I know there are kids that almost at the very top end of the ACT score, okay? So those kids obviously be well prepared, but well prepared to me is, did they finish their four-year degree? Where did they go? What does that look like? So again, some of this is the interpretation of data that's real critical that we look at, and not just look at the state protocol of looking at data and comparing us and saying, all right, Cheyenne has a lot of students, right? So we know that their score typically drives what the state average ACT score is. So we're always comparing ourselves. Are we over the state average? Well, you got Cheyenne, Casper, going into a lot more details. That score to me, we really needed to segregate that score. What does it mean to Johnson County and those kids that are going on to a four-year college compared to somebody that's going to a trade school? But I'm sorry, we talk about career and college readiness. These scores don't necessarily truly say how successful you'll be out, because there are a lot of other factors that come into that play. Is that fair?
It is, and I would say an important part of this is ranking. You know, where ranking in Travis, you're shaking your head too. Ranking is really where we get to compare, you know, where our school district is with others. We are currently 16th in the state. How many?
16th out of high schools or 16th out of 48 school districts?
I don't know where the figure came from. Do you know, Emma?
I believe it's out of high schools.
Okay, out of high schools. So 16th out of 48.
And the only reason I ask that question, because you see how we interpret things out in the community. Are we 16th out of 48 school districts, or how many high schools are within 48 school districts? Are we 16th out of 150 high schools in the state of Wyoming? So sometimes just that 16th, that when we clarify those things, are we 16th in the state with high schools, or are we 16th in the state with districts? Are we 16th out of 3A schools our size? So sometimes how we look at that data can be a look a little bit different too, fair?
I've been reading about colleges re-requiring the ACT scores. They tried a couple years without, and we're having a terrible time getting the right people in the right classes. So there's some of them adding it back. But I'm a licensed land surveyor, hold a couple of engineering degrees in civil engineering technology, and my profession, surveying. So one of the things that I don't think people often appreciate is, if I'm remembering 32 years ago, so you guys may have to correct me, but when I was a junior, the stress of the ACT and the SAT was all kinds, man. Everybody running down the hall screaming, you've got to have this and this score to make this profession. You had to have a score of that to do this. So there's a ton of pressure. And then you get in that room and they hand you out this bloody book you got to read through and try to fill all the little dots in their amount of time. And it's stressful. It's uncomfortable. It's difficult. And guess what they make you do to be a professional engineer or surveyor? They lock you in a room and hand you a book just like that with that clock ticking real loud right in front of you. And you've got to take that test and pass it. And of the graduates in engineering, not all of them can ever pass the test. It's really difficult for them. So this is a valuable experience, not just in I have a score that I may now show to people. It's valuable in the practice for taking these big tests. A lot of professions are going to require them. You need to know how to sit there with that clock staring you straight in the face and fight your way through it and get it done anyway. So there's some experience that helps with it too.
Kind of going what Mr. Oski was saying in terms of, you know, what does 19.4 mean? Like, while I do agree that, like, no matter what you get on your ACT score, if you're going, like, YO Tech, it doesn't really impact you that much in comparison to if you're going to a four-year college. But I think no matter what you're planning on doing with your life, if you know basic trig, you're going to get at least a 23 in your math section, you know? And I think while it may not be a good metric for how or whether our students will succeed, it is a good metric in terms of do our students know basic trig or do they understand, I don't know, sentence composition, etc. And I think that, you know, even if we're 16th, whatever that means, no matter if a 19.4 will matter, it is a metric that shows, okay, this amount of our students might not entirely understand grammar or sentence structure, or they might not understand, you know, special triangles, whether or not they're going to be using those. It shows if they know that.
Would you agree with that as a measure and a metric by which to assess how well the school district is?
The professional learning communities we're talking about, well, what does that mean and what subgroups are we meeting or not meeting? So absolutely. Because that's what let's come back to. Why is this something that's even on the table? That's why there's an accountability piece, the state accountability, so scores matter, right? So we have to look at that piece. So it's not just whether we believe this or not, the state of Wyoming holds us accountable for these scores, okay? So that's a trickle-down effect, and sometimes that can be the snowballs rolling downhill. Higher expectations on teachers, then that pushes those higher expectations down on the students too. So kind of that pendulum, it starts at the top and moves down, because that score, to me, as a superintendent, is also an accountability score. It's not how well our kids are doing, it's an accountability score. So we got to ask that question. So what does 19.4 mean? That means 20% of our population that had to take this scored a 28 or higher. I mean, so those are things. So what are we meeting the needs of those kids? We don't struggle. We do this in public education. We put a lot of focus on interventions and kids that aren't there yet, and we forget to focus on the kids that we maybe need to challenge or do some upper level things with. So you're always trying to find that balance with what does that score actually mean.
So students, how's your personal experience been of that? Of how does Buffalo High School, how has it been meeting the needs of every student?
I know that recently, like Buffalo High School, they've been introducing the core issues after school most nights a week, and that's been super beneficial to a lot of students to be able to go in and focus on an area that they're struggling with, and I've noticed a lot of benefit with that to help all students with all levels of, like, their core issues help that they may need help with.
And what about high-achieving students? Do you feel encouraged and that you're challenged? I would imagine some of you are indeed high-achieving students.
I especially think it's just about, like, the courses you take as well. And, like Emma said, like, I think another thing that most teachers are starting to, like, integrate into their classes, which I really appreciate and want to see more of, is, like ACT, especially just being, Grace could probably attest to this as well, being a junior, like Mr. Oski said, like, the ACT is stressful. Like, it's going to happen, and it's a big test, and that number, like, will loom over you, and it has value. So it's really nice when, like, certain, like, teachers have started to integrate, okay, maybe every Friday or, like, every other week, we're going to take a class and we're just going to look at ACT-type questions or stuff that they've done in the past, and just to get ready to prepare you, because the more preparation you get, I think it's the better score you're going to get, so I really appreciate that.
And also, like, the teachers incorporating some techniques into daily classroom activities helps us, like, build up that stamina and practice so that when it does come time to take these tests, then it's easier because we're more used to that procedure.
I think the counselors have done a pretty good job of looking at, like, individuals' ACT scores and kind of seeing what their interests are and getting them into the right classes, too, to kind of piggyback off of what they said.
So what encouragement does, how much direction comes from school administration, Charles, and how much does the board get involved in these kinds of decisions or encouragement?
Well, it's sort of interesting. As a school board, we have one employee, and that's the superintendent. We can't march into buildings and start commanding teachers to spend more time in the classroom or take more field trips. None of that's a choice. We have one employee. So all of our enthusiasm and thrust and bright ideas, you're only one vote of a 9-person board. And it doesn't matter if you're the chair, the vice chair, or just a trustee, it's exactly the same vote. You've got a 1/9 of one. Until we can agree and come to a majority, we don't give any direction or any help. So a lot of what we do is trying to come up and debate and talk about good ideas and things we can do to help. And then we run it by the educational experts that Mr. Roski is and he brings with him to help us figure out what to do. But it's a lot of consensus, a lot of building some group idea that this is a good idea. This might be the way that we can help students succeed more if we implement these strategies. So from our end, it's a real big picture and it's not specific at all. There's almost no individual details. We see results from tests all the time, but it's always in big spreadsheets and compilated data. So then we're trying to use that to see what tricks and tips can we use and how other school districts are doing to improve on those. So it's a big picture from our point of view.
So I'm going to say, I'm going to take it from that. A school board is different than any other board. They're held responsible for an educational, as we talk about drinking from a fire hose, because this board has so much to learn, because they will make the 30,000-foot decisions as a board as a whole, but then that direction trickles down through me into where we're at. So they have a lot of training. So when we're sitting here talking about these things, it isn't simply just showing up on a Monday night, one day a week, and making a decision. It's hours and hours and hours and documents of reading and understanding public education, right? So as we move down to this, then you have my level. So how are we performing as a district? Then an expectation from here on out, since I've been here, is school improvement plans. Even though you're not required to submit one to the state, we are going to start consistently doing that as a district. Each school has a school improvement plan based on student needs, the performance of students, which comes back to that kind of that overall commitment through a whether you want to call it professional learning communities, but that collaboration to do what's best for kids. So it starts at the district level by saying, we want to be high performing. How do we get there? Comes down through me, and then there are expectations that get pushed down through that process. But that accountability model is really what drives some of the recommendations that comes to the Board of Trustees. When you see a state report card that says your school's not performing well, obviously, that's a canary in the coal mine that says you need to take a look at what you're doing. Sorry. But I can also say this. Public education has changed. You guys might not realize that yet in your positions, but your parents, when they went to school here in Buffalo, our world was completely different. All right? The ACT, you took it because the teacher told you you had to take it, but it meant nothing to go to college. You just took it. You showed up, you signed up, you didn't have no prep. It was the same thing. You just took it. Okay, but it didn't mean anything to me at all, I'll be honest with you. However, the day and age, it means something now, because back when I graduated, a school wasn't held accountable for ACT scores. All right, we just took it to say you took it, and somebody tried to bluff you by saying it's important to get into college. I asked. I was in your shoes. Do I need an ACT score to come to college here? And their answer was no. We'll take your money, we'll educate you, we'll move on. Okay, it's different now. So now some colleges, if you don't score a certain level, you have to take remediation classes to get in. So it is a whole different perception of what we had to do and how education's changed. And if we look at the history and you look at the future of education, it's going to continue to change. So when you start talking about things that we're doing now, we need to put systems in place that will adapt to the requirements, because you might be going to a college this year, next year, excuse me, but that college might have different entrance exam down the road too. It's going to look different, so we got to adapt to that, fair? But it does look different from their point of view, but I want to point out, all you have to do is ask Travis or anybody else. This isn't a simple job where you just show up and make a vote based on personal opinion. It's about data. It's about documentation. Frankly, when we did our accreditation this year, there were over 50 videos that we presented to a group of people of all the great things we're doing in Johnson County. There were 50-some pages of documentation. So a board is overseeing a lot of things. And so in your world, it comes back to BHS is going to be different than KC. It's going to be different than New West. We just kind of have to meet the individual needs of each building.
Students, you wanted to talk. You wanted to ask some questions about beyond just academic success and academic scores and so on. You wanted to ask some questions about how academic success and activities can be entwined together, and also, you know, just what is a good preparation within a high school for any student, wherever they're going after graduation. Would you like to flesh that out a little bit?
I guess it's just like, what do you think your outlook is on like extracurricular activities, like, and how it affects like our education? Like, is it helpful? Does it hurt? What are your thoughts? Does it take away from?
So activities are an important, essential part of the culture of any building, right? Mm-hmm. But with that comes the but. There's only so much time in the day. Okay, so within that, what we all want to do, so we are an academic-driven public school, but activities are a critical part of that culture, that environment. Kids that are coming to school and finding that balance is not a simple thing. It's kind of actually a very hard balancing act. So JCSD number one has the most, probably the highest percentage of kids that are involved in activities. Right, we have quite close to 90 kids, whether it's athletics or clubs or boosters. We have a lot of kids participating in a lot of things. However, what we don't have is 48 hours in a day. All right, we don't have 14 days in a week. We don't have 60 days in a month to get all this stuff. Some of that, when you talk about up here, the well-being of students, I think we as adults also have to balance the fact is too much impacts the well-being, overall well-being. Because I know there's probably some of you in this room that probably go to bed at midnight or 1 o'clock because you're doing homework and activities, right? And then you're getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And I can personally tell you that's not best for your well-being. But there won't be one person that will come back and say, oh, let's drop this activity or take away this opportunity, right? So we've got to be able to manage some of that. And then we also got to have this hard conversation. We got to live within our means, all right? What can we afford and not afford? So when we live in a situation that we currently are with funding, ESSER funding is going away, it's not about what we want, but what we can offer within the amount. If your checkbook says $100 and you go to the grocery store, you can't buy $200 worth of groceries, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no different from me. My board is holding me accountable for a long-term, sustainable, balanced budget. So as funding changes, we also got to be able to say, yes, I will tell everyone I've been here, if you know the history of me, I'm all about activities and extracurricular because I know what that means. I'm also a former vocational teacher who knows that not every kid is a four-year bound college doctoral program. There are kids that are out there making a lot of money and they went to a trade school, okay, in that process. But we do have to live within our means of what we provide and don't provide. So I think those are some of the key factors. But am I the biggest cheerleader? Absolutely, for extracurricular. But in that, I sit in a role and a responsibility that I also have to make a recommendation to the Board of Trustees of how we get there financially and with the well-being, not just only of you as students. I want to speak to adults. The number of people that volunteer extra time, that group of people is getting smaller. Mm-hmm. And those people are getting burned out, in fairness to them. Okay, they have families, they have lives, there's lots of different things. So it is a balancing act of what that looks like. But overall, if we can afford it and we have the time to do it, I'm going to be the biggest supporter of it. But sometimes I feel like the adopted parent where I have to say no, and people don't like the word no because saying no is a hard thing. But the reality is that's the position I'm in. Fair?
Well, and to tack on to that a little bit, there are things that we must provide. I mean, school lunch is an example that it's not an option. It's not a choice. We have to make sure that everybody's getting some lunch today. They can't learn if they're starving. It's not going to work. So there are a whole series of regulated and required things that the district has to provide. We can't back those down and say, you know what, we're just not going to bus anybody anywhere anymore. Let's just quit that. Not an option. I mean, that's some great fights. But some of those things, we have to meet some check boxes early on, and then with what's left, now that we've met every single requirement, we have this much left to do things with. And that's when choices get real difficult. You can't fund every single thing that everybody wishes we could be teaching kids in school. So it's a very small pool of money that ends up at the end where we can start saying, I want to support activities, but I can't have 18 traveling teams in this sport. I just can't pull it off. So you'd be surprised how much is mandated. I was shocked when I got on the school board to learn that so much of this is driven by requirements. That's not a choice or a vote. It's something we just got to do. So,
you know what I'd love to do with you guys as a student leadership? We did a marshmallow activity with the board and with administrative team. If you're up to it, I'd love to put on another one of those learning sessions, and we take buckets of marshmallows and we talk about the required areas, how we put money in, how we take money out. If you guys are interested as a leadership group, this is not 4 hours. We can simply do it, and I won't wear black pants, so I'm not marshmallowy from head to toe again. But what a great activity for you guys to visualize to understand how funding works in a district. If you're interested at some point in time, Kate will have you come and record and see all the giggling. And when you guys are looking in the bottom of the can and say, this is all the money I have left after the requirements are taken out, you'll kind of give you a perception of things, right?
It's a fabulous demonstration that shocked me. I got to tell you guys, I'm a second year on the school board. I went bust. I ran completely out of money. I funded everything. And so I was broke. One of the experienced principals was sitting there working the activity with us. When he was done, he still had about a third of a bucket of marshmallows left. He knew exactly how much he could put to the different causes. So it was real interesting to see.
So that might be a challenge, or not a challenge, an opportunity that I'd love to do with you guys sometime. Is that fair?
Yes.
So students, I've heard something that I wonder whether you heard too, which was that this school district has the highest participation in activities. Does that surprise you? Do you feel like there is a lot of things on offer here?
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I definitely think there's something for everyone. And if there isn't, like, they have done a really good job at opening up different opportunities and finding a way to fund those things. And I just, like, you look at the students we have at the school, and everyone is just very, very versatile. Like, they're athletes, they're in different clubs, they do music, they do art, they do, like, everything. And everyone's, like, obviously, yeah, we get spread pretty thin, but, like, just to have a lot of school districts, like, I've done, like, through the school, actually, I've had a lot of opportunities to go. Like, my sophomore year, I went to All Nationals for choir in Washington, D.C. That was partly through the school. And, like, meeting kids from just all over the whole United States, and they're like, oh, you get to do this and this? Like, you either got to be in band, or you got to be in sports, or you either got to be in speech and debate, or you got to be in choir, or, like, different things like that. So it's really, really cool that we get to be able to be versatile and just, like, grow as a people and just to be able to get better at different things. I just think that's really cool, and that I'm grateful for the opportunity of that.
I mean, it truly doesn't surprise me at all. I don't think there's one kid that I could even name that isn't a part of a club or an organization or a sport or something in our school. I mean, look at myself. Like, I'm in FBLA, FFA, you know, student council. All of us in here I know are in multiple organizations, and it's just something very special that we do here at the high school, because not only does it bring kids together, but, you know, it provides that opportunity for us to be able to do something outside of class. And it doesn't surprise me one bit that we're the most, one of the most involved schools.
It also teaches us a lot about how to balance things in our life, because we can't have all the homework we have and be in every activity and not think intentionally about what we're doing. And we're very grateful for all the opportunities, but we also need to, it's our responsibility to make sure that we're not spreading ourselves too thin.
Yeah.
And to do what we need to do to enjoy ourselves and our extracurriculars, but also be students, which is our job.
Yeah, it like definitely shows, like teaches us how to make those hard decisions, which like you are going to need for the rest of your life. So I just think that's a good opportunity as well.
Do you feel that there's pressure to do everything, to do it all?
No.
No. I don't think too.
So you can manage your time.
Mm-hmm. I wish I could do it all, but
I'm curious if you guys are seeing, I volunteer for a bunch of different organizations, and we are running out of volunteers. Everyone's struggling to get new members, to get people to come to the meetings and help set up things. I'm wondering if you guys are seeing that. It's the same group of people that move from volunteer activity to volunteer activity to make things happen. Do you guys have a good mix of people, or is it the same group always doing things?
I've definitely seen a decline, you know, in participation. It's normally, you know, the same group of kids come into a lot of the activities, you know, the ones that are super dedicated. But we're definitely seeing some kids that step up and work hard, but we're seeing a lot of that change. I mean, even outside of school activities, I'm a part of the American Legion Auxiliary, and we're even seeing it there. I mean, so it's something across the board, and it's not just in our schools, but it's going on everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's a society.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure that somewhere there are a whole barrage of psychologists and psychiatrists figuring out why we are no longer participating and so volunteer oriented as we have been before. But I know a lot of people have been pointing at all sorts of different reasons. It doesn't seem that there's a simple answer to that.
Yeah.
Well, students, thank you very much indeed for spending time with Mr. Oski and Mr. Pearson and for asking such important questions. I just have one thing before we wrap up, which is that we've talked a lot about change, either in either a positive or a negative direction. In a school district, how long does it take to affect change? And if something happens,
great
a
question.
Score happens, then you get the data. And as we know, this is a very data-driven school district. And then how long does it take to correct that? Because it's possible that a freshman here is not going to benefit from whatever the data readings are from this current year. What is the juggernaut like to turn around, Charles?
Well, when you can give me that specific number of years, I would be good.
Yeah.
But the reality is, if we, every year we're reevaluating things, you're going to tweak things that will benefit kids that start as a freshman. But the big change takes time. Looking at some of the different successful districts, and it's not because of these scores that they're successful. I want to emphasize that. We're looking at districts that have been able to adapt and change and maintain as education has changed over the years. By balancing what they're calling here with activities, they're always successful at the WASHA level. They're always successful academically. They're receiving national. That's because there's a culture and a system that's in place. No matter whether the board changes, whether district leadership changes, they're adapting to the needs of kids. That takes time. And that's, you know, I'll just, being a historian, that's 5 to 10 years. However, between 0 and 5, they made the changes that impacted kids in a positive way. But the ability to adapt with the changes and the requirements that's happening in public education, that's changing all the time, that has to be an annual year-to-year thing. But when you make major changes, it takes years. And I would say a minimum of 5 years for major changes to be put in place. But it doesn't mean between 0 and 5 that you're not incrementing that up that's going to benefit kids over time. Seniors, I'll look them straight in the face right now. If we were to implement a change today, it's not going to impact the world at all. They already have their credits. They're on their way out. They're going to be on and moving on. However, freshmen could be impacting where they are. But there's always a transition period.
Kind of going off of the idea that big changes take a while to see any differences, it's something we bring up a lot because it's close to home. But if it takes a long time to see the impacts of a change, why have we seen so many schedule changes in the high school in the last 3 years? Because I think in the 4 years I've been here, I've had 4 different schedules.
But it's not about that kind of change. When I'm talking big change, I'm talking about change that becomes a system, that it's a culture that happens. So that's where what we're trying to do is become consistent, so you're not changing things all the time, because I think that's a disservice when you're changing things all the time. So you're kind of in that transition of, we need to find something and stick with it.
Yeah.
And that's the process that we're in. Fair?
So would you say right now that we're in a culture of like changing things quickly to try and see what sticks, or what would you say in reference to that?
We're not in the process of changing things if they need to stick. We're in the process of changing things that have been identified that need to change.
Okay.
If we're throwing mud on the wall to see if it sticks, that happens in my office. If we're throwing something out that changes systematically, and I know you don't understand this, but you can with a couple hours with me, is changes that have been made are because of requirements that have to be put in place so that we can start looking at some things. Fair?
Yeah.
But I would like to say in 4 years, we'll bring a freshman in here and they're going to go, man, we've had the same schedule for, you know, the last 2 years. We're starting to move forward, okay? You guys just happen to be in a phase where there's some accountability and how we're tweaking things, okay?
But having heard that aggravation of the continuous schedule changes, one of the things we did different was pass a 2-year schedule this last time at the school board to lock in for at least 2 years. We're not going to reshuffle the deck and see if we can make everybody jump through the hoop again.
Yeah.
So we're hearing that that's a problem and trying to take baby steps to address it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, because when I first got here, I thought we had a 2-year calendar, and then, no, we did not. So we've now started adapting 2-year cycles of things so that we can do that. Master schedule, that's a rumor that's out there. Why are we going and looking at master schedules? Is because I don't want to have to change it all the time. Was there a directive from the superintendent, because it was data-driven, that every kid needs to meet with every core teacher every day? Absolutely, because data showed that our kids were missing a lot of core time with teachers, so that was a directive that changed some of the schedule. But just to throw something on the wall and see if it sticks, I want to reassure you that's not the leadership style I have, right? My job would be easy if that's all I had to do is throw mud on the wall.
Well, thank you, everybody. Interesting, very interesting conversation, and answering many questions, but also opening up many new ones. I hope we can join together again and continue these conversations.
Well, hope. Let's make it happen.
Absolutely. Let's do that.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.